Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict travels to Loreto on Italy's Adriatic coast to join 500,000 young people looking ahead to World Youth Day in Australia next summer. And the city of Sibiu in Romania gears up for the third European Ecumenical Assembly, drawing Christians of all denominations from across the old continent. Welcome to the program. Up to 500,000 young people joined Pope Benedict on Sunday for an outdoor mass near the shrine of Loreto on Italy's Adriatic coast. The event marked the culmination of a two-day youth festival organised by the Italian Bishops' Conference as part of preparations for the next World Youth Day to be held in Sydney, Australia next summer. Young people from all over Italy joined the Pope for a prayer vigil on Saturday, where they were able to share some of the problems and challenges they face, as well as hearing Pope Benedict's words of encouragement, urging them to be courageous protagonists in today's society. Under the scorching sun on Sunday morning, the Pope was then joined by hundreds of Italian priests and bishops for the celebration of Mass, during which he urged young people to take the lead in caring for our threatened environment. My colleague Chris Altieri has all the details.
...150 bishops and 2,000 priests gathered to con-celebrate the Mass with Pope Benedict XVI, who was greeted by the cheers of 400,000 young people, whose enthusiasm was not diminished after a night of prayerful vigilance on Montorso Plain, hard by the Marian Shrine in Loreto, Italy. The weekend's encounters with the Holy Father were the high point of the meeting of the Agora of Italian Youth, the first of 3 years of intense faith formation and missionary activity planned by the Italian bishops for the youth of their country, a program aimed at preparing the young members of their flock for World Youth Day next year in Sydney, Australia, and harnessing the energy released by that event. This Sunday's Mass with the Holy Father was the central event of the pilgrimage to Loreto.
Il Padre Celeste... In
his homily, the Holy Father spoke of the need for young people to play a role in the building of a more just society, concerned with the common good and for each of its members, in which everyone may enjoy the goods of the earth. Pope Benedict praised the young pilgrims for their involvement in volunteer work and initiatives for the promotion of peace and justice, and called on young people to do their part to protect the future of the planet and provide for a sane, just tutelage of all creation. Before it is too late, said Pope Benedict, courageous choices must be made, aimed at rebuilding a strong alliance between humanity and the earth. Pope Benedict said we must all have the courage of humility, and spoke of Mary's humility as that characteristic of hers which God prizes above all others. Pope Benedict said, to become truly young in the evangelical sense, we must look to Mary's example. At the end of the Mass, after praying the Angelus and inviting those present to carry his words of encouragement and promise of prayer back home, Pope Benedict gave 72 young people a special missionary mandate, inviting them to bring the good news even to the ends of the earth. I'm Chris Altieri.
And my thanks to Chris for that report on Pope Benedict's visit to the Shrine of Loreto on Italy's Adriatic coast. As you heard there, this weekend's gathering in Loreto was an important step in the Italian Church's preparation for World Youth Day to be held in Australia in July 2008. Pope Benedict is planning to travel to Sydney for that event, which is expected to draw hundreds of thousands of young Catholics from countries all over the world. And it's not just Sydney which is preparing to receive such an influx of young pilgrims. Dioceses across Australia are busy gearing up for the event, as I found out when I clicked on the website for the preparatory days in the diocese in Melbourne, the largest Catholic diocese in Australia.
Welcome to Melbourne. This is our city and our home, and we're here to invite you all to come and start your journey to World Youth Day 2008 right here with us in Melbourne.
In the build-up to World Youth Day 2008, the Melbourne Days in the Diocese is celebrating with an exciting five-day program with lots of amazing things for you to see and do.
Melbourne's the second biggest city in Australia after Sydney, and there's nowhere else quite like it. It's famous for shopping, eating, fashion, the arts, beautiful buildings and interesting people. So come and be a part of it all. Melbourne's a real melting pot of many cultures and many faiths. It is also Australia's largest Catholic archdiocese. And if there's one thing we all have in common, it's this. We all love our sport.
Well, one former sportsman and teacher who is now helping to organise these Melbourne Days in the Diocese is Tim Davis. He dropped by our studios here at Vatican Radio recently to tell me more about how these ambitious World Youth Day preparations are shaping up.
With the World Youth Days being held in Sydney, we've been asked by the organisers from Sydney's end whether we would support them by providing hospitality and accommodation for pilgrims on their way to Sydney. And as Melbourne is the biggest archdiocese in Australia, we were asked to take on a lot of the pilgrims. And being the city that it is, Melbourne is a very proud events city and loves hosting people and the Australian hospitality. And so we're inviting as many pilgrims as possible to come from all over the world on their way to Sydney and stay with us for a week. The week will involve obviously a time for preparation for the World Youth Day, so time for prayer and some catechesis just within small groups. But it's more about the hospitality and the opportunity to see the living church in action in our diocese.
The Archdiocese of Melbourne wishes to offer the warmest of welcomes and hospitality to all pilgrims travelling onward to Sydney. For those of you living in the diocese, as chief pilgrim, I invite you to join me on the journey to Sydney to World Youth Day 2008. World Youth Day is a gift to the Church of Australia, and on your return I encourage you to take the opportunity to share this gift and continue to be a witness to Christ.
Archbishop Dennis Hart of Melbourne there. Tim, you're expecting up to 100,000 people from abroad, aren't you? I mean, that's quite a daunting figure, even for a city that is used to organising events on a scale of this kind.
Yeah, well, I guess we're expecting probably not all of those will come through Melbourne. They'll be spread around the various dioceses all over Australia, but a large proportion will come to us in Melbourne. And yeah, with our numbers, I guess, we're looking to host as many as possible. So around 25,000 to 30,000 we're anticipating.
So where are you going to put them all? With host families, I presume?
Yeah, it's a good question. We've decided to really focus on staying with families from our parishes and from our schools. We have a very big Catholic education system, and so that's a good resource to draw on as well. But in speaking to many people who have been to various World Youth Days, one of the best aspects has been the days in the diocese, which lead into the actual World Youth Day celebrations, because it's an opportunity to actually connect with people from a different culture, a different country, and actually live with them for 5 days and get to know the mundane, the daily life, which we think ourselves is our boring part of our life. But for international people, it can be very interesting and helps people to understand different cultures and their faith life and how that's developed and sustained.
So you're talking about chances for prayer together, some catechetical things. What about in terms of really teaching people about the church in Melbourne? What are you hoping to show them?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not anticipating that this will be a mini version of the World Youth Day. It's quite different. Basically, we're hoping to, if you can imagine, a group comes to us from Korea, and we house them in a parish or a cluster of parishes, depending on the size of the group. And then we would hope that in the morning they would meet with other parishioners and their group at a local church, celebrate Mass or a prayer service. And then from then, there are opportunities to be involved in various activities, which include a festival of music and cultural exchange, the opportunity to visit a place like the Tarawarra Abbey, where the Cistercian monks live, to do a pilgrimage walk following Blessed Mary MacKillop, who's we're hoping will be Australia's first saint. So there's a variety of things. Then in the afternoons, we've on our travels around the world, we've tried to make contact with key leaders in the church, cardinals, bishops, and key lay leaders, to hopefully give a bit of an insight into areas of interest. For example, Cardinal Oscar Rodriguez from Honduras is bringing a group from Honduras, and he'll be speaking on one of the afternoons. We're hoping that Marianne Glendon will be able to come down and speak, being in Pontifical Council for the Laity and being head of law at Harvard and her interests there. Cardinal Napier coming from South Africa and speaking on issues of racism and the apartheid era that they experienced in South Africa and how that country is moving on. So just a bit of a sprinkling of people from all over the universal church.
To give a real flavour of, as you say, the universality of the church.
Yeah, and for more specifically in Australia, I mean, I think people are interested in, we don't have the religious history that Europe holds, you know, but I guess we want to expose people to aspects such as the Aboriginal culture, sort of the pioneering and missionary Catholics and Christians of our time in Australia as well, and see what they've done and how far they've come in just 200 years, really, just over 200 years.
It all sounds very exciting. There's a major problem, seems to me, and that is cost. If you're talking about young people coming from Latin America, from Africa, how can they afford the journey to Australia?
Yeah, that's something that we've really tried to address, and it's been very important to us because we don't want this to be an event just for the wealthy Catholics of this world or from Western countries. And so part of the fee, registration fee, is going to a solidarity fund, which will mainly focus on the Pacific region because it's been unattainable for the Pacific region to be able to get to Europe most of the time because of the expense. So we think that while we have this celebration in Australia, it's a good chance to give them an opportunity to come. Also, it's been really impressive to see the approach of our parishes and schools who've just decided we want to sponsor people from certain countries. One school is called Nazareth College, and so they would like to sponsor a couple of people from young people from the Holy Land to come. And then Brother Mark, who is the executive officer, has been also approaching businesses and business people, and there's been some generous responses with some people offering to support young people who would not normally be able to afford to come down and experience it with us. So
this is going to cost you as a diocese quite something too, but I understand the state is supporting you as well.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate in Australia that, and particularly in Victoria, where our state government are sharing in the costs with the church. It's interesting, the state government take a lot of pride in being a bit of an event state. We have the Grand Prix and the Australian Tennis Open, and we hosted the Commonwealth Games last year and the Olympics way back in 1956. So even if the church wanted to make a mistake, the government won't let us do it. So, yeah, which is, it's great to have that support because it gives us extra confidence and gives us, provides us with people who have logistical expertise and to make it as smooth an event as possible.
And it does sound as though things are going ahead fairly smoothly. There must be, I imagine, though, people who are dreading the disruption to daily life, aren't there? Some killjoys who are really dreading this as an event, an invasion of people.
I think so. I mean, with any element, with any event, you're going to get an element of people who are not going to agree with what's happening or mightn't see the benefits. But I think it's like I think it was described as a slow-moving steamroller that is just going to gradually build momentum. And I think what often happens and has happened in other cities is that people haven't really known what to expect, but then all of a sudden the enthusiasm builds and they see the streets filled with young people enthusiastic about their faith, about Christ, and singing and talking, and they start to ask themselves, where have these people come from? What are they so happy for? What, you know, and it's really infectious. And we're very sure that as things build up and as the public become aware, secular public within Melbourne, they'll get on board and be very supportive and enthusiastic.
Because the Catholic Church in Australia is not so big in numbers, is it? I mean, what is this event going to mean for non-Catholic young people, non-Christian young people?
Yeah, well, I guess when we talk about particularly the days in the diocese and the World Youth Days, it's unashamedly Catholic, but it's open to all. So we're looking for opportunities where we can involve people of other Christian faiths as well. And so we have an ecumenical prayer service we're holding one day, will be one of the activities. And so we're very keen to engage other Christians. I think we're about 26%, 27% Catholic in Melbourne particularly. But yeah, it's a great opportunity for evangelization and re-evangelization of, as in most of the Western world, we seem to lose, you know, that demographic of young people between the ages of about 15, 16, and then some of them don't re-engage until later on in life. And so it's about us reaching out to those people through secular media as well. And we're hopeful that this event, this gathering, will be a bit of a stimulus for those people, or an avenue for them to come back and get involved with their faith.
You've already got a very attractive website, haven't you, working on this outreach, as you say, to people who may not normally be engaged with the church.
Yeah, we've had some really good people involved in our office in Melbourne who have set up the website. And that's going to be our major portal for delivering information and communicating with people. And then there's a few other initiatives that we're developing too, in terms of, you know, Facebook and MySpace and other avenues which young people are engaged in.
You've also got somebody called Father Stan Fortuna, who is obviously attracting, reaching out on the musical front.
Yeah, that was great. We worked him very hard when he came to Australia, Father Stan. He was just sort of like a bit of a taste of things to come. And it was great, the effort he put in. He travelled to most of the major cities in Australia, and I know I looked after him for basically 2 days, and he did about 12 radio and television interviews and a couple of concerts. And yeah, it was good. I'd never met him or really heard much about him before that, but we had a concert in Melbourne which was very successful, and a lot of young people came along.
Music is a great gift from God, and it's a powerful, powerful means to communicate and transmit both good and evil. Just like the media, there's a lot of cameras that's showing bad things, but that's not going to stop us from using it for the glory of God. And the same with music, all types of music, all genres of music, even rap music. Ain't nobody like a Catholic party, cause a Catholic party don't stop. We on a first name basis in heavenly places, like every family we put names on the basis. The house is big, plenty of spaces, got all kinds, jacks, kings, queens, and aces.
Franciscan Father Stan Fortuna there, who's been involved in the build-up to World Youth Day 2008. Tim, what has it meant for you personally to be involved in organising an event like this?
It's been an interesting experience. I've really enjoyed it. I'm from a teaching background, so I was teaching phys ed in a school for children with behavioural difficulties and social difficulties, and so I was sort of plucked from this. I'd been involved with some social justice festivals that had been run in Australia, but I'd always wanted to be involved with organising a World Youth Day, and was so excited when it was coming to Australia, and so I jumped at the opportunity when I got offered a role. And yeah, it's been, for me, particularly in my job travelling around the world, to see the Universal Church, that's been very moving. And it's not so much about the places I've visited, but the people I've met from all corners of the earth, and to have that common faith and that common purpose has been really inspiring. So it's been great for me in that respect.
You say you're from a teaching background, but you're actually a bit of a sportsman, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I did. I played Australian rules football.
Can you explain that in one sentence to our listeners who don't know what Australian rules football is?
Australian rules football is a combination between rugby, Gaelic football and soccer or European football. It's quite rough for the uneducated eye. No padding and a lot of body contact, but we're hoping to give visitors who come to Melbourne a good opportunity to go and watch a few games and make up their mind for themselves. They might think Australians are a bit crazy after watching a few of these games. Come together
to improve our lives. What can I say? We wish you all the very best in this initiative, and
thank you very
forward
much
to hearing more about it as the months go by. So.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Tim Davis there, one of the organisers of the Days in the Diocese for Melbourne, leading up to the World Youth Day in Sydney, July 2008. Lord, I know you hear us. Every Christian is warmly invited to join a pilgrimage of hope across the continent of Europe. That was the appeal issued some 18 months ago at the first preparatory meeting of the Third European Ecumenical Assembly, expected to be the largest meeting of its kind that Europe has ever seen. A year and a half later, those preparations have been going on in parishes and dioceses across the continent and are about to culminate in Sibiu, Romania, as thousands of delegates prepare to attend the opening of the Assembly on Tuesday evening. The Assembly, the third of its kind over the past two decades, has been organised by the Council of European Catholic Bishops' Conferences, or CCEE, and the Conference of European Churches.
The Conference of European Churches covers 37 countries throughout Europe, 147 churches within those countries, so quite a widely based body, Anglican, Orthodox, Protestant, Reformed, Old Catholic.
Church of England Archdeacon Colin Williams is General Secretary of the CEC. At one of the preparatory meetings for this third European Ecumenical Assembly, he told me more about the choice of Sibiu in Romania as the venue for this historic gathering.
Sibiu is an interesting city. First of all, very topical in 2007 because it is one of the two European cities of culture in that year. Secondly, it's a city which, although is within the Orthodox tradition of Romania, has historically had within it quite a strong Protestant and particularly German Protestant population as well, which means in itself it's a place of meeting of different Christian traditions, and also a sign of our wanting to encourage all that is happening in Eastern Europe to build up both the church and society in Eastern Europe.
We've become used to seeing these kind of meetings of Christians of different denominations working and praying and witnessing together. What do you see really as the hardest challenges? What are going to be the really sticky issues that are going to come up at this meeting perhaps?
There are issues clearly which still divide us, theological issues around the primacy and the position of the Pope, the self-understanding of the churches as churches. These are major theological and ecclesiological issues which still need to be faced, but the important thing is that we come together as seekers after ways through all these issues, determined that we shall find our way through. We shan't solve them in 3 days. There's a whole process going on in Europe, between the churches of Europe, to try and find some sort of way through the issues which still divide us. We hope that we in some way will contribute to that.
The Assembly will continue to be used as a resource as we return to our own countries at the end of it, to become a renewing and as such a resource for a continued reflection on the meaning of ecumenism.
Monsignor Andrew Faley is Assistant General Secretary for Ecumenism and Interfaith Relations with the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He'll be part of a sizeable delegation in Sibiu from the UK, headed by Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor. I asked him about hopes and expectations ahead of the opening on Tuesday.
I think the hopes are very high, Philippa. I think more importantly than high hope will be a deep-rooted common sense of living together as Christians, reflecting carefully and prayerfully on the meaning of the gospel and the unity of the church in mission towards the needs of the world, and that the Assembly is offering a great opportunity through the richness of the traditions, particularly the Catholic, Protestant and Orthodox traditions within Europe, to embrace more courageously the ongoing agenda which the world presents to us, not least in Europe.
This is the first time that such a meeting is taking place in a majority Orthodox country, isn't it? How is that going to affect, do you think, the workings of this meeting?
Yes, I think the previous assemblies, which have been quite seriously rooted both in the Catholic and Protestant traditions, have led very naturally to a celebration and of the event within a country where the Orthodox tradition is very rich. And I think that will be a great challenge, particularly to the Catholic and Protestant delegates present, to learn quite seriously, again through prayerful reflection and discussion, and living alongside our Orthodox sisters and brothers, exactly what the Orthodox tradition brings to the place and meaning of Christianity within Europe.
As I say, it's been a long time in preparation, hasn't it? Almost two years. Can you take us a little bit, if you like, through those different stages of preparation?
Yes, certainly. The first stage, which took place a year past in January 2 years ago in Rome, was the stage of the preparation rooted within the Catholic tradition. And delegates who were present at that particular stage celebrated in a very rich way the place and purpose of the Catholic tradition, particularly rooted in the history and culture of Rome as the heart of the authority and identity of the Catholic tradition. Then we moved very carefully through a series of meetings and reflections at more local level within our own countries on ecumenical issues, towards a meeting then in Wittenberg, which took place in the February of this year, 2007, Wittenberg Lutherstadt, where Martin Luther, of course, proclaimed his own particular concern and rich challenge to the whole meaning of the Christian tradition within Europe. And from there again, from then onwards again through these past months, there have been further reflections in each country and preparation again with much prayer towards the culmination of the process, which leads us all safely, hopefully, to the great gathering and the assembly in Sibiu in Romania from Monday onwards.
This meeting, of course, comes very close on the heels of the recent document from the Vatican's Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith on the Catholic Church's relationship with other Christian communities, other Christian denominations. Do you think this is going to cause some, perhaps, upset? What do you expect the reaction to that will be?
Yes, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith's declaration wasn't an ecumenical document. It was an instrument in order to, for bishops within the Catholic tradition, to consider more the central truth that the Church subsists within the Catholic Church, as has always been proclaimed since the Second Vatican Council, to be part of the belief and central to the belief of how the Catholic Church understands itself to be the Church. And I would want to stress it was not an ecumenical document at all. It was a clarification and a reiterating of the central truth of how the Catholic Church understands itself to be the Church. And to that extent, I don't think it adds anything at all in terms of ongoing dialogue with our other Christians, sisters and brothers within their own traditions. As Cardinal Walter Kasper of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity has made very clear on several occasions since the issue of that declaration. So I'd want to be very careful about anyone thinking, both Catholic or other Christian tradition, thinking that this document in any sense changes how the Catholic Church responds and relates to other Christian faith traditions.
My thanks there to Monsignor Andrew Faley, Assistant General Secretary for Ecumenism and Interfaith Relations with the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. That's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.